Boy, do we have a lot to talk about today on Political Rewind. This has been one heck of a week in politics, both here in Georgia and across the country. I think by the time we get out of here, Jim Galloway, we're all going to need to have a little something to drink, whether it's sweet tea or maybe a little good scotch.
And then need something stronger. I'll wait till I get home.
That's Jim Galloway, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, whose columns you read in the Thursday and Sunday paper. You actually saw his column, his Sunday column was in the paper today, and we'll talk a little about it down the road, because he wrote a really interesting piece about the ghosts that hovered over the Comey testimony yesterday. We'll get into that later in the show.
The one that was missing was Banquo's ghost. I think that was the only one. That was the only one who didn't show up.
Yeah, all right, Julianne Thompson, who is a leader in the Georgia Republican Party, has been for a long time. She's a Republican strategist. It's great to have you back in the mix, Julianne.
Thanks for having me.
Sitting right next to her, State Senator Nan Orrick, a Democrat, a longtime Democrat, and like Julianne, someone who is fierce about her side of the political debate.
Bring our passion to the table.
Yeah,
thank you.
Get right in front of that mic. Bring it right up to
and
you.
And she's
there,
sitting to the left of Julianne, I will note.
Yeah, and that's Mark Roundtree. He, of course, is the president of Landmark Communications. He's a political pollster. He does partisan polling for candidates, of course, but he's also the pollster for WSB-TV, and this is the perfect day. We kind of figured a week ago when we said, let's get Mark on this Friday show, that he would have a poll for WSB, and he does. We'll get to it in a minute, but Jim Galloway, let's start with your poll.
We're stepping all over him. The AJC poll came out one day after Mr. Roundtree's data dump.
And what's the headline from your sixth district poll?
The deadline is that John Ossoff has built a lead. He has built a lead outside the margin of error. He's leading Karen Handel 51-40%. 51-44%.
Gotcha.
Correct. Now, that includes three categories of voters. That means likely voters, that's the voters who lean toward a particular candidate, and those who have already voted. For the first time that I can remember, we are incorporating that last category in, because the early turnout effort by Ossoff and Handel has generated enough voters that it can be picked up in a poll now.
Okay, so let's pause for a minute, because our listeners like to really dig down on this stuff. So, Mark Roundtree, you're a professional. What do we mean by leaners, and what's the typical methodology of including or not including leaners? First, what are they?
Generally speaking, you would go into a survey and ask voters who they support. If they give an undecided answer or an ambivalent answer, you would follow up with a secondary question. Would you lean to one candidate or another? In bigger polls, you would even ask that question of people who have an opinion between the two candidates. You might say, for example, someone is for John Ossoff, and the follow-up question, is that strongly support, somewhat support, or weak support? So depending on the amount of funding behind the poll, you can kind of dig deeper into looking how strong support is.
Okay, the question, Jim, so go ahead, dig down in your numbers a little bit, okay. And then we'll go
okay,
to Mark's
now,
and
now
talk
if you,
about
if you,
all of
if
it.
You take out that last category, if you take out the last category of already voted people, and we'll get to that in 2 seconds, but then Ossoff still leads 49-45%, which I think is more along the lines of what Mr. Roundtree's poll showed on Thursday. But okay, Ossoff, we have Ossoff getting 60% of the female vote. He's picking up 44% of the white vote, which is well beyond what's necessary for a Democrat to win an election, even though this district is very, very heavily white here. Handel leads only in age groups. Handel's only leading among those 65% and older. She's got 51%. The two key things I'll throw out here. Donald Trump has a 22% favorability deficit in the 6th district.
Wow. In what is a Republican district.
35% say they have an unfavorable view of them. 57% have a favorable view of them. 57% say they have an unfavorable view. Now, the other point that, Mark and I can debate this. 81% say healthcare is a top issue for them. Only 25% say they support the U.S. House Republican effort to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Which is not out of line with what we've seen in a lot of national polling, I think.
But Karen Handel has embraced that.
Yes, exactly. Of course. All right, let's do this. Mark, let's get your numbers out and then get Julianne, Nan, and all of us talking about these numbers. You have a much closer race than Jim does.
Yes, we do. The timing of the polls pretty much overlapped. We started our poll at, we started doing our survey work, the digital part of it, where we go and the digital component. We started it at 10 o'clock at night on the night of the debate on Tuesday, and we ran that for 24 hours. We also then ran quite a lot of phone calls asking people what they believed on the following night, on Wednesday night. We have the race at essentially, if you round it off, 50 to 47 for John Ossoff right now, with 3% undecided. What's interesting, there are a couple interesting points. Undecided voters were literally unchanged to the decimal point. It was 3.3 a week and a half earlier, and it's 3.3 now. We don't show anywhere near the bandwidth of the difference between the AJC poll and females between this and AJC and Landmark. We don't show. We show it being we show the race being. I think Jim, is it right that the survey that you all have had it at a 60% for females?
Right. Also, it's getting 60% of the female vote.
Right. And we have it at 54. I'm not saying, by the way, just to be clear, I'm not saying one poll is right or wrong. I'm saying we're finding different results. We're finding a much closer race right now overall.
So let me open this up. So, and Mark, I'm going to throw the question to you. You just made a point of the fact that undecided voters have not changed at all. 3.3% last time, 3.3% this time. Do we throw those people out and say they're not coming to the polls? Or are they really still making up their minds? Because that makes a difference in how these candidates close out the race.
Well, what's interesting is there may be a very small number that are undecided. Among people who are 65 and over, it's under 1% who are undecided. Those people are the most aware, the most knowledgeable about the candidates.
And the most likely to turn out, too.
Yes, sir. And then the 18 to 39 group is right at 6%. I'm saying that there's some juggling around with that group as to who they are, but I'm saying that among undecideds, they're probably people realistically who won't vote. But yeah. I'm in the same position, Jim, as your pollster and everybody else. You cannot put words in the mouth or opinions in the brain of people that you poll, and 3% of them did say they were undecided. My contention is these are people probably not likely to vote based on how old
point,
they are.
And, you know, they were only a few weeks out at this point. Julianne, Nan, what do you hear when you hear these? Anything that stands out for either of you?
Well, I do think, and thanks for having us on. This is going to be a great hour here we've got. I think it's very interesting that the AJC poll showing 60% of the women's vote is going for Ossoff, and that's a real flip when you've got a women candidate in the race. And I think it's really tied to the women to the health issue in general, because women manage the health care decisions for their families overwhelmingly, and they're looking at what's happening in Congress on that. Also, the high profile of the role that Handel played at Komen in really driving the decision to try to block funds to Planned Parenthood.
So that's been a really hard push by the Ossoff campaign on TV.
So real quick, though. So whether you are on, you know, Mark's figures show 54% of women, AJC 60. The point is you still, to your point, Nan, but just to make clear, there is a difference here. A majority of women seem to be heading toward Ossoff at this point.
Can I interject something? Because it's, why did we just focus on the percentage of women going to Ossoff and not focus on the percentage of men going to Handel? Because the numbers are equal. Now, they may or may not be in your poll, Jim, but the same situation can be said is true of males going to handle.
In our poll, she gets about handle leads among men by about 52%.
Julianne, why don't we get you in the mix? What did you hear? What stood out for you in these two sets of numbers?
Well, first of all, let me push back a little bit on the senator's comment with regard to females and the health issue. Karen Handel did absolutely nothing to hurt the women's health issue whatsoever. What Karen Handel actually did was be part of a team that tried to help Komen disengage from Planned Parenthood, who does not, at the statements before Congress by Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood, they do not do mammograms.
Of course they don't.
I don't know how many times that has to be said, but for some reason, we keep going back to the fact that somehow people believe that Karen Handel is cut off health care screenings for women. That did not happen.
No, it didn't. Yeah. Certainly it did. And my doctor does not do a mammogram when I go for a female health checkup. My doctor sends me to a mammogram specialist clinic.
The vast majority of women.
And that is the case. What they do is hands-on palpitate the breasts. We know this. Any woman that's been to the doctor knows this. That sort of breast health check happens with the primary provider. For mammograms, they send to a third party.
As a woman who lost her sister to cancer in 2012, as a woman who has walked in the Relay for Life, which is sponsored by the American Cancer Society, and as a woman who does not walk in the Race for the Cure because I do not want my dollars going toward funding the nation's leading abortion provider.
Oh, my goodness.
I do not. I really take issue with the fact that you all are accusing Karen Handel of doing something that she did not do.
I'm going to stop this, and I'll tell you why. Because I really don't want this show to turn into a one-issue show, and it very easily could. I have questions, Jim Galloway. It is certainly true that Planned Parenthood does not do mammograms. I'm not aware, and perhaps you are, about whether it has the Ossoff campaign, in fact, talked about Planned Parenthood or mammograms, as opposed to, yes, Planned Parenthood does.
We've got a semantic difference here. Okay,
yeah.
When Karen Handel talks about what Planned Parenthood does, her emphasis is on mammograms. When Ossoff talks about it, it's breast cancer screening.
All right.
But back in 2012, when this actually happened, what's surprising is it was a surprisingly small amount of money involved in the whole thing. I think like $643,000 nationwide.
All right. So here's what I want to do with that right now, because I really don't want to have the whole show turn into a debate about this. Mark, is it fair to say that without regard, I get it, there's a disagreement about this, but there seem to be a couple of issues that are resonating on either side of this race right now. As Jim pointed out, the Ossoff campaign has pushed this Komen Planned Parenthood thing and said Handel was responsible for it. On the other side, an issue that seems to be resonating for the Handel campaign is the guy doesn't live in the district. Those are both pretty resonant issues.
Actually, I'm going to disagree with you, Bill. Here,
yeah,
okay. The AJC poll finds two interesting things. Number one, 68% of all those polled, this includes Republicans, say Ossoff's residency is not a factor or only a minor factor. Now, 87% say Karen Handel's lack of a college degree is only a minor factor or not a factor at all. So you've got those two issues there. Their voters are very dismissive of those two flaws in each candidate.
That's interesting, because I wouldn't have thought that was true. Mark, did you want to jump in?
There has been a lot of time spent on those issues, and it is kind of interesting. I think voters have sort of baked that now in those two issues, baked them into what they already are going to believe as far as they vote. What I find interesting about the debate, and I'm just going to give two sentences on this.
Sure.
The whole Planned Parenthood discussion, what's interesting to me, just as an observer of this, nobody is using the term abortion. Neither candidate is willing to risk their political base over that issue.
That's an excellent point, charging people up.
No one mentioned it.
So, Julianne, here's what I found interesting. We talk about the issues that matter and don't matter in this race. Excuse me. The The AJC poll, when you look into the crosstabs, they asked, what is the reason you're voting the way you're voting? And when I saw this number, I thought, well, given all the issues that we could be talking about, here's what it comes down to. Of those who are voting for Karen Handel, 91% say their reason for casting that vote is because they support Donald Trump. Of those who say they're voting for John Ossoff, 99% say the reason they're voting for Ossoff is because they don't like Donald Trump. Jim, am I characterizing that correctly?
Small correction. Okay. Ossoff is getting 99% of the vote from those who say that, right, that opposition Trump is their main motivation. Handel is getting 91%
okay
of the votes of those who say supporting Donald Trump is
Julianne, this is a nationalized race, period, right?
Well, of course it is. Of course it is. And I think that we're in tumultuous times right now. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But this is also a special election, and things cannot be gauged the same way that they would in a typical general election. So I think it's all going to depend on – it's not going to depend on the polls. It's not going to depend on how much media is run. I think it's going to depend on who actually gets out and personally touches those voters. Canvassing, I think canvassing is a huge thing, and I think it's going to be dependent on that and who gets their voters out
to the polls. And I think she's – Julianne, I think you're exactly right. And the AJC poll has picked up, I think, something interesting. I'd like to hear what Mark weigh in on that. We found that 54% – of all voters say they have been touched in some fashion by a mailer or phone call by the Ossoff campaign. Only 35% of Karen Handel, 35% of voters say they have been touched by the Handel campaign. And I think that's a reflection of the vast amount of money that's being spent here.
Yeah. And which Ossoff has a huge advantage, and that's exactly what I wanted to talk about now.
What's interesting, though, is they're not getting ROI for all of that investment
ROI.
Right now. Return on investment.
Okay.
They're spending, yes. I think that the they aren't. If you isolate only early voters, everybody who's actually voted so far, nearly 50% of them have a Republican vote history. Only 20 among Democrats, it's 31%. So in the last election, just for comparative purposes, 45% of early voters had voted in a Republican primary. This time, it's nearly 50. That number is an increase, but it's not the biggest number. The last time, again, it was 40% of early voters. 40% had a Democratic vote history. It's down to 31% now. So they are touching doors, but their voters are not voting in the numbers that they were in the first election.
All right, let's touch, before we have to take a break, let's touch on a couple of interesting developments a couple of reports that came out this week. Number one, we just ended a reporting period. The candidates on Wednesday, I think it was, had a deadline to file their latest financial reports. I can't even – Ossoff showed in the last 2 months that he has raised $15 million. $15 million, Nan.
Yes.
On top of, what, 23 that he'd raised before that.
Yes.
And what's interesting about that is he also reported he's got $1 million cash on hand. So they've spent an unbelievable amount of money, some of it booked for TV that'll be on the air in the weeks ahead. They've already got the commercials reserved. That kind of fundraising, when you compare it to the 3.8 that the Handel campaign reported for the last 2 months, is staggering. And I wonder if in the long run it works against Ossoff.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, we're looking at polls here that show him above 50%, and that district is changing as we speak. Donald Trump only bested Hillary Clinton there less than 2 points. Close to 1%. And then, quite frankly, everything that's going wrong with the White House and with Trump and the total embarrassment that he's becoming to this nation rolls downhill into this race. The Paris Accord is resonating in this race, in my opinion. You find suburban voters in Atlanta to be poll significantly well on support for environmental issues.
I am
by nature a worrier.
You know, as soon as I put,
part of your attraction, Jim.
As soon as I put out a poll, my newspaper puts out a poll, I'm saying, ooh, are we hanging ourselves out to dry? Because in the past, Georgia voters have shown a tendency to experiment going in one direction, and then the closer you get to election day, they tend to come home. So there is that. I'm going to throw that out there. But if you're the Democratic Party and you have been spending tens of millions of dollars on the 6th district race, and you come up empty on June 20th, then I think that's going to be a pretty darn big vote.
Going to be huge. And Julianne,
the votes aren't counted, are they?
And let's throw a little honesty in with that fundraising mix here. What is it, less than 10 or less than 5% has been raised in the state of Georgia? It's all coming from out of state.
You mean Ossoff's money?
Ossoff's money. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I add. I mean, look, he can do vast things with this money, among them, as Jim pointed out, getting out there and touching voters. But I do think there's an argument that the Handel folks and Republicans can make that you're alluding to right now.
Well, they've been trying to make that argument. How's it working for them?
Yeah, but this is still a Republican district.
Well, here's the thing, though, Nan. He got 48% of the vote last time, and in the landmark poll, in our poll, as of two nights ago, he was at essentially 49.7. So the argument, I think, can be made that there is now diminishing returns on all of that money. If he spent $100 million, would he get one more point at this point? I don't believe so. I think we have absolutely hit the diminishing returns. And at this point, there are well-meaning people around the country, many who don't live here. They throw money at a campaign because they're mad at Donald Trump. And I believe that it's fair to say that campaign, that they may win the race. They may or may not win. But there is a tremendous amount of waste going on right now.
He's got better numbers right now than Trump had in the November election in this district.
Let me ask you something, Mark, here. Okay, this is AJC poll.
Yeah.
We've got 39% of the voting universe in this poll say they voted for Trump, 39%. 49% say they voted for Clinton. Which to me implies that Ossoff has managed to change the voting universe that we saw in November when it was 47 or 47-46?
Well, either that or they overpopulated their poll with Democrats.
Okay, we got to take a break. I want to make one point. I do want to make one point, since this is all going to be about turning out the vote, the GOTV effort. It strikes me that the Ossoff people have raised enough money to buy a car for each one of the people they've identified as their voters to go to the polls, or at least give them an Uber ride.
in a very, very big SUV.
Yeah. All right, look, we've got to take a break.
That wouldn't be energy efficient, though.
We've got to take a
break. Would be upset.
We got to take
Wouldn't
a break.
You?
Wait a minute.
I don't know why Republicans turn so anti-clean energy. It just baffles me.
Nan, Mark, can I take a break, please?
I think it's
Julianne,
warranted.
Thank you for how polite you are being toward the host. We do have to take a break, but as we go to the break, there are people starting to tweet us at PoliticsGPB. We'll read some of your tweets. The president has been holding a news conference. It started a little before the time we went on the air. We've been monitoring it. Lisa Clark has been monitoring what he had to say. And he did make a statement that I think you're all going to want to listen to when we come back from this break on Political Rewind.
Financial contributions from listeners like you are not the only gifts that keep GPB on the air. In fact, many listeners have already chosen to donate a used vehicle to GPB. We'll pick up your vehicle for free and send you the paperwork for your taxes. Get started today. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or go to gpb.org/cars. That's 877-GPB-1-CAR or gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
Thank you for choosing Georgia Public Broadcasting. We're an 18-station radio network of GPB. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, a major contributor to the economic and cultural vitality of downtown Atlanta and the metro Atlanta area. I'm Ellen Reinhart.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Pollster Mark Roundtree of Landmark Communications, Democratic State Senator Nan Orrock, Republican strategist Julianne Thompson, and, of course, our friend Jim Galloway are here. The president was meeting, I think I'm right, it's the president of Romania. Somebody tweet me if I've got that wrong. And as they often do, they held a joint news conference. It was the first opportunity that reporters had to ask the president a question about his reaction to the Comey testimony. Let's hear what he had to say.
Mr. President, I want to get back to James Comey's testimony. You suggested he didn't tell the truth in everything he said. He did say under oath that you told him to let the Flynn, or you said you hoped the Flynn investigation, you could like.
I didn't say that.
So he lied about that.
Well, I didn't say that. I mean, I will tell you, I didn't say that.
And did he ask you to pledge his
And there'd loyalty? Be nothing wrong if I did say it, according to everybody that I've read today, but I did not say that.
And did he ask for a pledge of loyalty from you? That's another thing he said.
No, he did not.
So he said those things under oath. Would you be willing to speak under oath to give your version of
100%. And I didn't say under oath. I hardly know the man. I'm not going to say I want you to pledge allegiance. Who would do that? Who would ask a man to pledge allegiance under oath? I mean, think of it. I hardly know the man. It doesn't make sense. No, I didn't say that, and I didn't say the other.
So if Robert Mueller wanted to speak with you about that, you
I would be glad to tell him exactly what I just told you, Jim.
Wow. Pretty aggressive questioning by CNN on that one. The battle is joined, Jim Galloway. The battle is joined.
It was an amazing morning.
Yeah, I want to. So let's talk about what happened yesterday. And if you don't mind, I let me share an observation with all of you and let you discuss this. I don't know about you all here, but I tend not to put these big political battles between personalities in the kind of human perspective, thinking about, oh, these are real people. They have feelings. They have emotions. They have reactions to what's happening. And it really wasn't until Jim Comey opened his mouth and in his first statements yesterday made clear to me something I hadn't thought about. He was really hurt and angry, whether he's right or not. He felt he had to defend himself, and he was hurt that he was fired as FBI director. It never occurs to me.
And so you have a national situation driven by personal emotions. I think you can easily say that's the case on President Trump's side, and certainly on a fired FBI director.
Anybody want to jump in on that? I just found that fascinating. Yes. All right, let's do this. Go ahead, Nan.
I'm just reflecting, Bill, and you're right. I think that's part of the power of Comey's testimony and presence yesterday, is that you felt you were listening to a real person. He had an air of authenticity about him, and he had a certain vulnerability.
All right, here is just one.
But you didn't feel that way when he made those comments that he did about Hillary Clinton still being under investigation. That's the thing. I mean, the Democrats have done a complete about face. Now they trust Jim Comey.
Yeah,
I'm commenting on Jim Comey's presentation to the nation yesterday.
Just, if I may add here, going to what you were saying a moment ago about the personality here, I think most people would feel like the admittance of leaking essentially was probably part of that personal feeling, because obviously it was a mistake on his part at best. But driven by the personality points that you're talking about.
Let me start. We're not going to play a lot of sound, because if you haven't heard everything by now, you should have. But I do want to play just a little bit of what I thought was a reflection of Comey being kind of astonished that he was fired. This is just one of the statements he made.
You've seen the picture of me walking across the blue room. What the president whispered in my ear was, I really look forward to working with you. So after those encounters...
And that was just a few days before you were fired.
Yeah, that was on the Sunday after the inauguration. The next Friday, I have dinner, and the president begins by wanting to talk about my job. And so I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, three times you've already asked me to stay or talked about me staying. My common sense, again, I could be wrong, but my common sense told me what's going on here is he's looking to get something in exchange for granting my request to stay in the job.
Okay, and I want to play one more thing and then throw it open to the panel, because I thought, again, whether you're on the Comey side of this or the Trump side of this, if you're just standing back and looking at this as a moment in American history, I thought it was astonishing to hear a former FBI director say this about the President of the United States.
I think the circumstances, the subject matter, and the person I was interacting with. Circumstances first, I was alone with the President of the United States, or the President-elect, soon to be President. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the President, President-elect, personally. And then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document. That combination of things I'd never experienced before, but it led me to believe I got to write it down, and I got to write it down in a very detailed way.
I throw this out to any of you to pick up on quickly. The nature of the person, I thought he might lie. Somebody respond.
Well,
react to that.
I think the record's clear. I think the record is absolutely clear. It's been documented about the lies of Donald Trump. That didn't start happening yesterday, that extend all the way back into his New York career as a real estate person.
Julianne?
Yes. I'm looking at an article from the Daily Caller right now, reading some statements by the DOJ spokesperson, Ian Pryor. And there are many, many disagreements that they have with a lot of the statements that Comey made. But if I could just read one.
Okay.
It says that in a statement from the DOJ that also pointed to the testimony that Comey said he was not aware of any memorandum issued from the Attorney General or the Department of Justice to the FBI outlining the parameters of the Attorney General's recusal. Sessions' chief of staff has pulled a March 2nd email to Comey and other DOJ officials saying, after careful consideration, following meetings with the department officials over the course of the past several weeks, the Attorney General has decided to recuse himself from any existing or future investigations of the President of the United States. And it continued to say that any of those matters should be discussed with the acting Attorney General, who will perform the functions of the Attorney General in those investigations. So if Comey is getting it wrong on all these things, I mean, it's very difficult for me to believe him on the other things as well.
Mark, you wanted to jump in.
Well, yeah, I was going to throw something to it. He's now said that President Trump was not under investigation. What's interesting to me is that he completely, just on a political level, prejudged Trump as being dishonest, even though they had never had interaction before and Trump had personally never given him the opportunity to learn to whether Mr. Trump was honest or dishonest with a personal relationship. So he prejudged Trump. The second of the two points that he it's interesting that Comey almost cannot see his own role in things. And I don't care which side of this you're on. He's talking about the nature of Trump without actually looking to the nature of himself to prejudge someone as being dishonest, strictly on a political level.
Just for a little bit of context, this was after his decision to start recording everything in memorandum form began on January 6th, after he and a number of other intelligence officials had gone to Trump Towers to inform him of many things, including the existence of that 35-page kind of package, opposition research package, that included some very salacious material about his alleged conduct, which he denies, while he was in Russia, and so he walked out of that meeting based on, you know, he's implying there was a reaction within Trump there that made him suspicious.
All right. I want to let you hear what some of the listeners out there, the people who live in this community, had to say about it. As I do, let me throw this out to all of you. Yesterday's hearing was like a Rorschach test, depending on whether you're pro or anti-Trump. And I just, real quick, I will give you my take on each side of that. Pro-Trump. Comey acknowledges that he did, in fact, as Mark said, tell Trump three times that he was not under investigation. People questioned that when Trump put that in the letter in which he fired him. Comey did admit that he leaked the memo. And in fact, there's some question whether that is government work product. He probably didn't do anything illegal, it appears. On the other hand, it may be hard for him to make the case that this was personal document. He did it as FBI director. And so there are going to be some questions about that. And in fact, Mark Kasowitz, Trump's personal attorney, says he may, in fact, file a complaint with DOJ about that. Comey did write that Trump said that if there are satellites, was the word he used, in his organization who were involved with the Russians, he wanted to know about it. That came out. Comey admitted he never pushed back in any of these nine meetings and said, what you're doing is inappropriate, Mr. President, I won't do it. And then he told us a story, which we're not going to get into because it takes too much time. But he was already worried when Obama was president about Loretta Lynch telling him to downplay the way he referred to the Hillary Clinton investigation. He said she requested that he call it a matter. I think those weigh in favor of Trump. On the other hand, this entire hearing was filled with Jim Comey setting up a case for obstruction of justice, and it'll be up to Robert Mueller to decide whether, in fact, there is true evidence for that. Anybody argue with
that? Well, yeah, just to but just push it just a little bit further, that Comey's testimony kind of indicates that nothing that happened while Comey was FBI director really qualifies as obstruction of justice.
While he was director.
But it would be the removal of Comey that probably is now under investigation. We don't know for sure.
And I sit here thinking, where is the outrage and the energy towards uncovering what Russia is doing in America's political landscape? Known actors that are doing this all over the world. We're at the point of unraveling and getting down to brass tacks about Russia's role in the election. And why the hell is Jeff Sessions hiding information that he's talking to the Russians? Right. Why did they all start off? That's where we need to be going. This character assassination of Comey that I think that is from the rooftops, from the GOP, and from the White House, frankly, it's a distraction.
All right, let's listen to Olivia Rheingold was out today getting a reaction to, she was over at Ansley Mall right in Midtown Atlanta, and asked people who were shopping over there what they thought about what they heard during the hearing yesterday.
Bars were opening early, and I woke up, the television was already on, and I stayed glued to it to watch the testimony. There's no question that Comey has all of my trust compared to Trump.
Well, it's kind of hard to believe anything Trump says. I mean, he's just a basket case, you know?
And all these secret meetings that he had that just wasn't normal in, like, past presidential offices, it's just something just doesn't seem right to me.
I feel like the only reason Comey is even doing this is because he's whining about losing his job. That's all this is coming from.
I was surprised that he had asked a friend to leak information concerning what was in one of his memos. That did surprise me.
And he didn't leak it directly either. I think that's an important distinction. That feels a little cleaner to me for some reason. I don't know.
I think that a lot of people I know are turning Comey into some sort of hero unnecessarily just because they don't like Trump and they're using him in this massive witch hunt on Trump.
All right, those are just voices of listeners. Julianne?
Well, first of all, I want to commend your producer for getting both sides. I think that
we always go out to
you
get
do,
both sides.
You do. You go above and beyond on this show. I think that that's very reflective of the way that the public at large feels. They're split on this issue.
Those folks, none of them were hysterical. Mm-mm. Now, there are some hard left people that are all hysterical. But the people, when you actually communicate with them in that format, you didn't hear anybody raising their voice and, you know, calling people, you know, crooks and impeachment. And those words were not being used. It was, is Comey a hero or not? It's also possible that he is neither.
Jim, I thought Nan made an interesting point and one worth exploring a little more. She said, where is the outrage about Russia's interference with the election? Certainly we know that the president himself and some of his most ardent supporters, Republican supporters, have downplayed that investigation. But you can also say that the hearing yesterday, there was an opportunity. Now, Comey can only say so much because it is an ongoing investigation. But he was asked very few questions, except at the very beginning and a couple other times, about the Russian investigation. And that was Democrats as well. We're so consumed, it feels like, with whether Trump is telling the truth or not, we're losing sight of that.
You know, actually, that was one of Comey's emphases, was that this is a very real, and he did make a point to disabuse the American public that this is a partisan issue, that the Russian infiltration of the electoral process was very real. Mm-hmm. And I think you've got significant buy-in among Senate Republicans on this now, particularly among people like Marco Rubio. I don't think they're echoing Trump's line that says this is a made-up story. I think they understand that this is very real, and I think I will tell you that's one after effect of the arrest of this young lady down mm-hmm. in Augusta
right.
for leaking a memo. I mean, that was if you read the contents of that memo, that would scare the bejesus out of you.
All right. The reality is that after all of this yesterday, this high drama, which it certainly was, the reality is it's all going to come down to the special counsel, to Mueller and what he uncovers. And that is going to play out for months. We're going to have to take a break. But before we do, some tweets. Thought Crime says, hasn't the U.S. interfered in more than 80 elections since Iran in 1957? Don't know the number, but we do know that we've been involved in other elections out there. Gary Lowe, Ossoff's money is ineffective. Poor selection of his political agenda to advertise. He's unconvincing. Jen Lewitt, I'm sorry, Politics GPB, but 45 has made his character known again and again and again. It's not a secret that he's not exactly truthful. PM, Patricia Meadows says, Republicans would be a lot more credible if they could just acknowledge Trump's well-documented history of lying and there are a great many more. Michael Linsbach says, hi, I left work early today, so it's the first time I've been able to live tweet. I still think GOP will hold the 6. Well, thank you for getting off early so you could tweet us, Michael. We got to take a break. Let's come back in a minute.
NPR journalist David Gilkey and Zabiula Tamana died a year ago this week on assignment in Afghanistan. And now we have new information about what happened.
This wasn't a random Taliban attack. They knew we were coming, or at least that Americans were coming.
I'm Audie Cornish, returning to that day in Helmand Province this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's 4 till 7 this afternoon on GPB.
Back on Political Rewind with Mark Roundtree, Nan Orrick, Julianne Thompson, and Jim Galloway. We're not going to get a chance to play all of it, but I want to play just a tiny bit. We talked to Jack Kingston yesterday, right after the testimony ended. Jack, of course, former member of Congress from down in Savannah. He's now off doing government affairs after losing his last bid for election, running for
U.S. Senate.
U.S. Senate. But we wanted to talk to Jack because he had a piece in the Wall Street Journal right before the testimony yesterday morning, basically saying, be careful what you make of Comey's testimony. He's just a disgruntled, fired employee. Let's just listen to a little of what we talked about.
I think in terms of the Trump side, he was able to get out of him that he was not a target of the investigation. I think on the anti-Trump side, that there were some very screwy conversations, to lack of a better word. The discussion of honest loyalty, the discussion of Flynn was disturbing, yet at the same hand, it was so disturbing that Comey continued to talk to the president either on the phone or in person and never went to the proper people in the Department of Justice and registered a complaint about it. So, I think both sides somewhat struggled for a tie on it. I do think what we did see was a lot of, great demeanor from the senators on both sides, that they do want to get to the bottom of it.
Jim Comey said something that I think many people found startling. He essentially said that he began memorializing the conversations because he was afraid that President-elect, at first, Trump, was going to lie about them. When you hear a former director of the FBI say that about a president of the United States, what's your response?
It's disturbing, and certainly it would bother anybody. If you felt the president was a liar, why'd you keep working for him? And why?
All right, we just kept cut out of that because we've talked so much. But that's Jack Kingston. Maybe we, is there any way we can put that up on our website of a waiver? Let's do that. We're going to put the whole Jack Kingston, but because later in the interview I asked him if he was still a staunch supporter of Trump or if events have changed his mind. He's still pretty much in the president's corner, Jim Galloway.
Oh yeah, yeah. He has become one of the more effective voices on cable news networks.
Mark Trump. Roundtree, I do want to share a tweet, especially with you, before you use that great business expression ROI, return on investment, in talking about you felt the Ossoff campaign has not gotten enough value for the money they've spent. Our friend Tim Echols, public service commissioner, who tweets us all the time, said, I thought ROI stood for retire Ossoff indefinitely. Thank you, Tim.
That's what Twitter's for.
And I'll say flip the six.
I've got no slogans.
All right. We've only got a few minutes left. But, Jim, let me start with you, if I can, and then go around the table. You know, whatever you think about yesterday, however you read that Rorschach test, that Trump came out of it well, it put a bigger cloud over Trump's head. The simple fact is, as long as this goes on, the Republican agenda in Washington is absolutely frozen.
Frozen, no health care, no tax reform, you know, the cloud that Donald Trump spoke about is very real. I will tell you one thing that did drive me, that I did notice about yesterday was how much this was being driven by the past. And we mentioned this.
Yeah, go ahead. You talked about that in your column.
Yeah, when first of all, you have Comey and the intelligence officers going to Trump Tower to see the president-elect to let him know that there's some very, very bad material out there that could be damaging to him. All right? The motivation he gave for that was he didn't want to start this relationship with Trump thinking he was J. Edgar Hoover and that the FBI was actually blackmailing him, that he wanted him to know that the information was out there. Now, maybe that helped that relationship. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it poisoned it. Then you had the February and March conversations where Trump would say, I hope you can see to let Flynn go on this, or I need this cloud lifted for me as quickly as I can. And that had that. Then we had that really interesting description by Comey, who interpreted this as, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?"
Beckett, Thomas Beckett.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking to Henry II. Yeah. We're talking 1,000 years precedent. And then you had Comey explaining that he leaked his personal memos because Donald Trump invoked Richard Nixon in Watergate and saying, gee, I hope Comey, when the tapes come out, Comey's not hurt by all this stuff.
Let's play a real quick version of this because of course, Trump tweeted, he better be careful, I might have tapes. And here's what Comey said repeatedly. Here's just one example.
All I can do is hope. The president surely knows whether he taped me, and if he did, my feelings aren't hurt. Release all the tapes. I'm good with it.
All right, we'll wait to see about that. But Julianne, let me go back to the question I asked. You really would like the Republican agenda to succeed in Congress. How do they go forward all at this point?
I think it's the absolute goal of the resist movement to keep this going, so that the agenda can, so that the policies cannot be passed. I mean, that's obvious to everyone. And I want to address the faux outrage when it comes to election interference. Of course, Republicans are concerned about Russian interference or any other interference. And also, going back to the tweet that I believe was sent from Thought Police, talking about interference into other elections by the United States, let's not forget the $350,000 in taxpayer money that was sent to One Voice to run a campaign against Benjamin Netanyahu, that was sent by the Obama administration. The campaign against him was run by members of the Obama campaign.
So, I mean, we do know that the Americans have interfered with other elections at times. But, okay, so, Julianne says that this is an effort, the resist movement, to stop the Republican agenda. And I think there's, you know, we get that there are people who are out to do that. But Trump has brought a lot of this trouble on completely himself.
And last count, the Republicans held a majority in both chambers, the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. They could barely get, huffing and puffing, a health care bill through the House. Now the Senate's saying that's not going to be anything that we're going to be doing anytime. So Mitch McConnell is saying, this is Mitch McConnell. This is the Senate Republican leader predicting that they're not going to be making progress. And that has nothing to do. I mean, Trump has brought this on himself. The resist movement, the anti-Trump movement, did not fire James Comey.
Mark, if we go through 2017 and don't get health care reform, don't get tax cuts, let alone tax reform, what happened? How are you going to view the challenges the Republicans will have in the 2018 midyear?
I think this would have been fine until Trump signed off on the budget deal. I think he got Supreme Court. Justice appointment. There were some other at least attempts to stop illegal immigration going on, but I think a lot could have been forgiven. But I think a lot of people are going to look at that budget deal and say, "Now, what was the point of all this?" I think that was a big mistake.
You've also got a debt ceiling debate that's almost right on top of this.
And this time it's Republicans who have the majority and are going to have to figure this out.
Right.
So we're in for some pretty interesting times ahead, which is why Political Rewind is here. Not one day, not 2 days, but 3 days a week. We're out of time. I wish we could keep talking because there's so much rich material to discuss. But I appreciate you, Mark Roundtree, for being here. Senator Nan Orrick, Julianne Thompson, of course, Jim Galloway. And I know that we all don't agree on these, or you all come from this at different perspectives. But thank you, as you always do, for having such a smart conversation. We're back on Monday at 2 o'clock, when we're just a little more than a week away from that 6th district race. Are there going to be any last-minute surprises, anything that can change what appears to be a neck-and-neck race? Anybody going to break out? We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about this question of whether there is a way that the White House can get out from under long enough to get a real agenda going on the Hill. We'll have Brian Robinson here. We'll have State Senator Elena Parent. And you, Galloway, you'll be here too.
Unless I break a leg.
Don't talk that way. All right. Look, thank you all very much. Olivia Rheingold, Jenny Amott, Lisa Clark, Tyler Morris. Appreciate your help in the control room today. Remember that if you can't be with us when we're on the air, subscribe to our podcast at iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And Jim Galloway will be posting the audio from this show on the Political Insider blog at some point.
I'm hoping to before 6.
Okay.
We'll get it out before 6.
You can listen to it there. Tell your friends who couldn't hear the show. That's where they can get it if they want. And remember, Thursday, July 6th, our other show, Two-Way Street, starts its weekday broadcast, 2 o'clock on Thursday afternoons, starting July 6th. We're really excited to be part of that weekday NPR lineup. Thanks, everybody. I'm Bill Nygut. Have a terrific weekend. We will see you again next Monday at 2:00.